The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So good morning. So one of the principles, teachings of this insight tradition, insight practice, is that this practice is not about seeing something new, but seeing in a new way. So not about seeing something new, but seeing something in a new way. So if you're sitting meditating, kind of waiting for something to happen, waiting for something special to happen, then you're looking for something to see. But if you kind of begin to turn around at yourself and look at how you see, and are there different ways of seeing? Can you see in a different way? Can you see your experience? Can you be aware of yourself, your world, in a way that's freeing, that you're not caught? One of the very common teachings that the Buddha gave is teachings on what's called the gratification, the danger, and the escape. And these three little considerations is something the Buddha emphasized, that what distinguished his own teachings from other religious people of his time. And he also said that he did not declare himself to be fully awakened, fully freed, until he understood the gratification, the danger, and the escape of this world. And here the word world refers to kind of the subjective world of our experience that we live in. So it's a common teaching of the Buddha, and I find it to be a fascinating teaching, this idea of gratification, danger, and escape. I understand it to be a reframing of our experience, so seeing in a new way. And we often, when we go into our lives, we often have a perspective, or maybe almost always have a perspective, with which we're seeing, by which we're understanding what's happening to us. And that perspective sometimes is not very helpful for us. So a person might go into any situation always ready to see what's wrong with it. And the perspective is, what is it that I don't like here? Someone else might go into the same situation and they're always interested in what they can get from it. And they're always looking, what are the goodies here? And what can I get? What can I do? What's good for me? Someone else might go into a situation and their conditioning is one of fear. And they're looking always like, where's the danger right here? Another perspective is, or perspectives, has to do with being self-conscious in various ways. So concerned about one's own self. So you go into a situation and you're always looking at the whole situation from the perspective of me, myself, and mine. How am I threatened here? How am I being seen here? Does anybody like me here? Do they not like me here? What can I get? What's in it for me? And so there's often a very strong self-conscious kind of framework in which we go in and see the situation in. And some of these frameworks or perspectives that we bring into our lives can be fairly subconscious. And they can be so obvious to us personally that we just think it's just not even there, just like that's how things are. And one of the functions of mindfulness practice, meditation, is to help us to see the perspectives that we have and to put a question marks behind them, after them. Because is this really the best perspective? Is this the only perspective that I need to bring with me into my life? Are there other perspectives in our experience? And so what I find fascinating about these three insights the Buddha talked about, the gratification, the danger, and the escape, is that it offers a different perspective, a particular perspective, maybe different what people often have. And so I want to talk a little bit about this threefold insight, a little bit how, it has inspired me or I found beneficial. The word gratification, I like to translate it as gift. What's the gift? What's the gratification? A little bit is, what is it that's pleasurable, what's enjoyable, what's beneficial, what's gratifying in the situation. But I like the word gift. What's the gift in the situation? Many situations have gifts. Many people have gifts. When my son was, I think it's possible he's grown out of it now, but when he was, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old or so, he had dyslexia, or say he was dyslexic. And he didn't, he went to a school where reading was taught quite late for standard schools here in this country. So he didn't, and the only place where it came out really was around reading. So now because they were taught, he was taught to read late, you know, the teachers didn't notice it was a problem. He didn't notice any issue. But my wife, who would often read to him and he would read a little bit to her, she noticed something is not quite right here. And so she started investigating and sure enough discovered that was the first to discover that he had dyslexia, a certain kind of classic version of it. And so then she started reading about it, and one of the books that made a big impact on her was a book called The Gift of Dyslexia. And so when it was time to tell our son that he had dyslexia, it was presented to him that he had a gift. Rather than he had some kind of disability or illness, he has a gift. And then he did a dyslexia program to kind of help him with his reading. And the person who was teaching it, who had dyslexia, and he also treated it like a gift. And my son admired this guy. He was a bit of a character, and he just really admired him. He thought he was a really cool, wonderful man. So his role model for what it is to be a dyslexic was, you know, this great guy. So my son thereby didn't suffer from the idea that he had some kind of disability. His parents didn't come to him and said, "Oh, we have to tell you something. There's a real problem here. We have to do something right away. You have dyslexia, and this is going to be a lifetime's problem." And you know, that would have, poor kid. But rather, this idea that it was a gift. And I've seen this in other situations where people have, you know, we have things called disorders, attention deficit disorder. Poor people, their brains are just how they are, and now they're told they have a disorder. It turns out that it seems to be what anthropologists are saying is that there's something like 10% of the population have this thing called attention deficit disorder. In the good old days, back when we were more tribal, it seemed like it was really helpful for society to have 10% of the population to have this particular capacity of mind to always be searching and looking and jumping around and exploring. And people, you know, people lived out in, you know, in the forest or the plains of Africa, and having some people in the tribe having that ability was a gift to the community. And in fact, people who live that kind of lifestyle, they don't have a disorder. They're completely adapted for their environment until they move to the cities and a whole other thing is needed for them. Then it becomes a disorder. But what a sad thing to put onto people that, you know, it's a perspective, right? You have a disorder. As opposed to the perspective, is it, what's the gift of that? And so in many situations, you know, people, we go through a variety of crisis, health crisis, and other things. And not a few people, when it's over, hopefully it's over, will look back upon it as a gift. And they're grateful for it because they've learned, they've grown, they had to look at their beliefs and values, what they think is most important. And some of their priorities shifted, some of their understanding of what was most important changed. So that was a gift, that situation. So the idea that when the Buddha talked about know the gratification of what's happening, know what's nice about it, know what's good, know what's pleasurable, know what the gift of the situation is. But then that's balanced with the second, know the danger. And what's the danger of a situation you're in? What's the risk? What's involved in it? What's the challenge of it? So I know some people have something they love to do, And they know it's harmful for them, and there's a danger to it. And so they will do it anyway because of the benefit for it. So for example, I seem to have now have problems with my feet. I had surgery last year. And when I was walking down here today, I thought, I really like to walk. I think that even if it causes some harm to my feet, there's a risk, there's danger. I think I'm still going to go do a long hike someday because it's so great to do. And that's it's a cost I'm willing to live with. But to know that that's the case, and then to walk into that with that knowledge, as opposed to being bitter or frightened or upset about what's going on. So to understand that the risk and the danger, some things we probably wouldn't do if we understood the danger of it. So if we go into a situation with conceit, what's the gratification of conceit? What's the gift of conceit? Well, if you're pretty conceited, sometimes you're a little bit more strategic in figuring out how to get what you want, which maybe has some benefit, I don't know. But maybe the danger is much greater. The danger of conceit is that from the point of view of a meditator, the primary danger is what it does to your own mind, what it does to your own heart, that kind of contraction and tightness and kind of a preoccupation that involves conceit is painful to walk around in, that kind of mind and heart. The danger socially is that maybe people will keep their distance from you because they feel uncomfortable with you. So what's the danger? What's the gratification? And so this can be applied to meditation practice. What's the gratification? What's the pleasure? What's the benefit of meditation practice? And there's a long list of things that can happen. One of them is that we can feel good sometimes when meditating. And not a few meditators feel quite happy when they feel happy. this is great, But what's the danger? One of the dangers is that if we're focused on feeling happy or feeling blissful states or calm states or peaceful states as being the point of meditation, or if we have conceit about, I'm a great meditator because I have these states, the states of meditation come and go. And if you live a full life, they'll come and go in different ways. You can't expect to have a steady state of, concentrated bliss or happiness. But if you identify yourself with the holding on to these good feelings, the states that can arise, the danger is when they go away, you're going to be miserable. I know I've met quite a few, maybe because I'm a meditation teacher, some people come and talk to me. And sometimes people talk to me when there's problems more than when there's difficulties. So quite a few people have come and talked to me about how distressed they are, about how there was a meditation state that was present and now it's gone. I've known people who have had blissful states of meditation at the end of a retreat, and a year later came back to retreat only to try to recreate that bliss. And usually people who try that usually have a miserable retreat. So what's the danger of having blissful states of meditation? The danger is that if you get attached to it, that and you over-prioritize it, that when they go away or when they're not there, that you'll suffer. But this is not to deny that there is gratification, there's gifts, there's pleasures, there's wonderful things that can happen in meditation. But we have to be very careful about how we relate to it, because there are dangers with meditation, with how we relate to it and what we do with it. So then the Buddha talked about, so the third one, there's gratification, there's a danger, and there's the escape, the freedom from. And this is not to deny the gratification and the danger, not to turn our, but it's just that everything has its benefits and, its gift maybe, and everything has its danger or its risk. And that's a wise life. To see that, understand that, means you're wise, to consider it that way. Then you can go about your life much wiser. But the third one is the escape from. And maybe it's unfortunate that the English translators use the word escape. I prefer to translate it as liberation from or freedom from. because escape kind of means you're running away from it. Okay, meditation was good, but then I got attached and I suffered. Now I know the gratification, danger of meditation. I'm out of here. I'm going to go take up, you know, square dancing. But the escape, the way the Buddha talked about escape, had to do with no longer being in the grip of desire. So being in the middle of this stuff, but no longer being run, caught in desire. Desire for things to be a certain way, desire for certain things to be not a certain way. And to understand the role of desire in this realm of gratification and danger is where the real wisdom of Buddhist practice arises. So what is my relationship to it? What is my wishes, my expectations, my hopes? And how, am I caught in the grip of it? Am I holding on to them? Am I making poor choices around the experience I'm doing because of this desire? So in meditation, again, if I have conceit about myself as a great meditator, it's good to have proof of that, how great I am. And then, and you have proof of it, then you can go and tell people, wow, I sat there and meditated and I enjoyed my breath for 10 minutes. Wow, that's cool. Everybody's impressed. Something. So we want some proof, right? So driven by the desire of conceit and wanting proof of conceit and wanting to prove how wonderful we are to other people, we're caught in the grip of desire. The escape from gratification and danger is to no longer be caught in that desire of conceit, wanting a certain kind of result to show off. It just kind of be there. So the gratification, danger, and escape. So the escape does not mean turning away from things, though sometimes it's wise to do that. It's not about turning away from the world, but rather to learn to be in the world without being caught in the grip of desire. And the image that I have for this is someone who can walk through the world peacefully and fully, interacting with the world, but they know they don't lean into it and they don't lean away from it. They're just there in a balanced way, ready to experience that which is gratifying in a healthy way and avoid that which is dangerous in unhealthy ways. So the gratification, danger, and escape. And we have that kind of perspective, then even things which are healthy and appropriate to do, we can look and see, what's the danger here as well? Is there danger in this involvement? The fact that something is healthy and appropriate doesn't mean that it's all, you know, great the way we're involved in it. What's the danger? So then we can take that into account and be wiser about how we walk into that particular situation. So, as I said at the beginning, there are, you know, we have different perspectives for looking at our lives. We have the native perspectives that we walk into the world with that we never even consider. We don't even know we have a perspective. And sometimes by adopting a different perspective, we can discover what our kind of inherent perspectives might be. And one of the perspectives the Buddha is proposing here is to go through your life with the perspective of asking yourself, what is the gratification here? What is the benefits? What's the gift here? And what's the danger here? And what's the escape from it? Literally meaning, what's the escape from the grip of desire in relationship to this? And if you ask yourself that question, then maybe you start seeing that you have a different kind of emphasis, different priority of what you want out of the situation. And then you might see that and become wiser about that. And then you might ask yourself, what's the gratification, danger, and escape from that orientation, from that attitude that I have that gets revealed? One of the reasons I also like this idea to call gratification the gift is that I think it's a really wonderful way of seeing other people. What's the gift of other people? As opposed to, I don't think I like this person. Even if, there's something that doesn't quite work for you about the person, but to ask yourself, what's the gift? And I like to assume that everyone is a gift. Everyone has a gift. So what's the gift? But also, what's the danger? What's the challenge with this person? So don't have a blind eye to this, but to be wise about it. And what's the escape in our social relationship is, again, not to be caught in the grip of our desires or wanting or not wanting something, but to have the ability to stay present. Again, not leaning forward, not leaning back, but staying present in such a way that we can be respectful and compassionate and generous to the people that we are with. So, gratification, danger, and escape. So do you have any questions or comments about this, or testimonials about how this works for you?
I had a burning question as I was trying this on. I am involved in, you know, basically a mission that I'm very passionate about, something positive. And I get tangled up in the desire aspect. I want so much for this school to work for these kids. I want so much for things to work out for my kids.
What's the danger? So, what's a danger for you having so much desire for it?
Oh, it just rips me up inside. But I don't know how to keep myself doing it without this engine of passion that I have. I'm really interested to see how I can integrate what you're talking about. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, and I don't know if it's a suggestion, but I'll just tell you what came to my mind. I just came back from being at the retreat center. A common phenomena on meditation retreats is that people will come to the retreat enthusiastic, with lots of energy to practice. And then after a day, sometimes the first day or two, at some point, the energy level drops. And not a few people have come to me and said, I don't understand why I'm so lethargic and so tired. I've gotten lots of sleep, lots of rest. I prepared for the retreat by taking it easy. And I started off really well, and I just, like, I'm uncharacteristically tired. What's wrong with me? And then after a day or two or some time, then at some point a different kind of energy arises. And then they have this very clear, clean energy that keeps them going. So because some people run their lives on either desire or aversion. And as you know, some of you know, I call this the caffeine of the soul. And if we stop, just like when we stop taking real caffeine, some people have like a 3-day withdrawal period and they feel lousy. And then at some point, some kind of clean, nice energy resurfaces and then it's nice again. But you have to go through that time. And some people aren't willing to go through those 3 days. So same thing. It might be the same thing for you, that you have to be very patient and willing to go through a transition time where you try not to act on your strong desire and strong wish. And maybe it's going to be a rough ride as you do that, because you don't see how you can do it. It's not possible. The whole world's going to collapse if you don't do it. You know, it's just like the pressure of, you know, that can be so strong. Like, it has to be done now. But you might have to go through this transition. It's going to feel hard to do. At some point, a different motivation might arise for you. And you'll find a very different motivation is not driven by the kind of desire you're talking about. So for example, another motivation, a really great motivator is compassion. And if compassion is done well or cleanly, there's no stress in it. But it's very motivating. So how's that as a response?
Thank you. That offering compassion as an image rather than desire was really helpful. And I think I need a retreat.
Yeah, we call it a detox center.
Yeah.
Great. Anything else? The Insight Recovery Center.
So in this context of gratification, danger, and liberation or escape. So before I started being mindful, I just started a few years, and in fact, only in the last 1 year. So I wasn't mindful of anything, and of my like good times or bad times, and I would just move on with my life. But since I started being really mindful, I also noticed that I'm mindful of all my emotions and my psychology. So I feel like it's kind of, I'm noticing all the negative side of my life, which I've never noticed before. So I was kind of freely moving through my life, not knowing what I'm doing. So I feel like there's definitely the gratification that it comes with mindfulness and more of a control on my emotion. But also it comes with this danger of kind of really being aware of all my negative aspects of my life.
So then the task for you is maybe to, since you maybe you're more aware of the danger, that what a drag it is to, you know, to see all your foibles, maybe ask yourself, what is the gift of seeing all that? How does it benefit you to see it? And become clear about how it benefits you, and then maybe you can be inspired. Because, like for me, being a Buddhist teacher, my first instinct, you know, when someone comes and tells me, I see all this kind of, you know, all my foibles in there, you know, all the funny ways in which my mind works, and my greed and my hate and all this. And my first reaction is, great! Because I know that this is a stepping stone to growth and freedom. And we have to see all this. And it's just, you know, it's a little bit of a drag. It can be a little bit painful to see. But the fact that it's painful does not mean it's bad. It can be very gratifying. Wow, I'm on the path and I'm growing up. So that's my, you know, so anyway, you might spend a little bit of time looking at the benefit of it and appreciating the benefit of it, as opposed to thinking about, oh no, I'm a terrible person. This thing about, you know, I'm a terrible person is not a very useful perspective. Is that relevant, what I said?
Yeah.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I really appreciate especially in the beginning of your talk when you were talking about like the different perspectives, and I feel like it's so easy as a human being to be stuck in this kind of trap of like, you know, my way of thinking about something is how probably everybody else is thinking about something on some level. And it reminds me of this story about my dad when he was a little boy, and his mom asked him to go pick some strawberries, and this was a time, I guess, where kids could still do that on their own. But he came back with a basket full of strawberries that were all green. And it turned out he had color blindness.
Oh.
But he didn't know that, and it kind of took that experience of, you know, his mom going, hey, wait a minute, these aren't red, they're green, to figure that out. And I feel like probably for all of us, we have this, you know, assumption that our way of approaching a situation is kind of the same. So it's just interesting to me.
Yeah, so it's good to have something then which can kind of challenge that or highlight that. So today I'm suggesting this gratification, danger, and escape. If you really engage in that in an active way, maybe then you can see where the, you know, what you're carrying with you.
For many years I rode horses, and that was one of the most wholesome and gratifying activities in my life. It's also very dangerous. And I was lucky and I wasn't seriously injured. And then recently I got into riding bicycles, and I thought, well, maybe that won't be dangerous like horses, bicycles. I did that for a while. I thought, well, no, I mean, you can go like 30 miles per hour and there's cars and it's over cement. That's not safe either. But it's so much fun, just like riding horses. But I don't know what the escape is. I'm always afraid. I never wholly enjoy any activity that I could get some joy from.
Well, I think you should wear a helmet.
Well, I do wear a helmet, but I mean, that's not going to help you.
I don't know. But I don't know the answer. It's a reasonable question you're asking. I think that what comes to mind is that if you're going to do something, there's many things in life which are enjoyable, nourishing, gratifying to do, which involve risk. Even, you know, going for a walk in the local park can be risky. You know, all kinds of things can happen. And we have to live with the risk. But if you know the risk, you know that riding a bicycle has risk, Then when you have an accident and break your arm, the escape is not that you escape from breaking your arm. The escape is that you escape from believing it shouldn't have happened, or escape from all these kind of ideas we have about this was wrong, this is bad, I was bad, as opposed to saying, this is the cost and this is the risk, and now my job is to live upright with that, with the consequence. I have to live with the consequences. And this ability to live with consequences is part of a mature life. And again, to stay upright, not leaning forward, not leaning back, but just there, I'm here, and not be depressed by the consequence, but rather, what's the gratification, what's the danger, and what's the escape in relationship to the consequences. So I've broken my arm. The benefit is that, the benefit is maybe you have to stay home instead of deal with Super Bowl traffic. And, or, you know, you probably think of better reasons, you know, better, but there might be some benefits to it. Maybe, you have to stay home for a while and you finally take care of all these things that you were ignoring at home. Oh, so some benefit to it. Or maybe, you know, all kinds of things that could come along. And then, and what's the danger of the consequences? Well, I can't do some of my responsibilities, but the escape is that I'm not going to be snowed under, I'm not going to be depressed, I'm not going to be caught in the grip of expectations, hopes, conceit, all kinds of things that operate with a broken arm or whatever it might be. So does that make sense, living with the consequences?
It makes some sense, although I worry more about things like being quadriplegic. Well, people should break their neck. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I shouldn't speak. I don't know that. And it's such a severe thing to happen to someone. I feel reluctant to make any comments. But it does happen to people. And might happen to you. Might happen to me. And so what's the gratification, danger, and escape in those? And I think what most people think about is how limiting it is, how terrible it is, and people get depressed. But what about the gratification? Is there any benefit to it? Is there anything, any value to it? Is there something to be discovered there? It might seem like a depressing thing or to tell someone to do that, but what's the alternative? Just be miserable? And so you look at it, but most importantly, in terms of something like that, is where's the escape? Is it possible to be a quadriplegic and not be caught in the grip of desire, expectations, ideas, conceit, all these things that go on? Is it possible to free the mind? And I've known people whose one of their gifts to the world around them has been their disability, their limitation, their illness. And part of it's a gift because and when they stay open and receptive, other people find it tremendously beneficial to care for them. And some people don't want to be cared for. They don't want to be a trouble for others. They don't want to be a trouble for anybody. You know, and so they feel very self-conscious being sick or being limited. But there's people who thrive. I've found it very meaningful to go and care for people who are sick sometimes. So maybe it's a certain gift to our society.
Well, thank you. That hasn't happened to me. I've been lucky, so it's mostly
Let us know if it does.
Well, the best thing I can do is when I do something, I go, instead of trying to convince myself it's safe, I just say, look, it's not safe.
And I think
I'll do the best I can to try to mitigate it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Many years ago, I went hiking in the Sierras by myself early in the spring. I think I was the first person hiking in the backcountry, and I had to walk across snow fields and stuff. But I was walking in desolation wilderness, and part of it was so amazingly beautifully pastoral. I felt like I was walking through a well-groomed park. I said, wow, this is great. This is so safe and comfortable. And then after a while, I thought, yes, it's pretty safe. It's beautiful. But I am like 20 miles away from any other human being probably. And what would happen if I slipped and broke my leg here? How safe would that be? So I was careful. Yes, please.
It has to do with music, so... Is that better? I've been playing guitar since I was really young, and I've never really disciplined myself to really practice a lot. And I've been in a band for a few years now, and we play, we're pretty good. And then I got exposed to this kind of next level of musicians, and I've been playing with them now. And I've gone to a couple of, you know, sessions at somebody's house, and then I kind of deal with, like, you know, there's a danger to playing with these people because they're so much better than I am, but there's a lot of gratification when I do play with them, and if I do well. And I saw them play last night at a club, the whole band. Like, I'd been playing with different ones, and I was like, oh, I stink. I mean, that was kind of my reaction, was like, these guys are so much better than I am. But yet, you know, friends of mine said, well, you play with them and you actually enjoy it. So I don't know if this really fits with this discussion, but I was thinking about this on the way up.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of gratification, but there's actually a lot of fear in this whole thing for me, too.
Mm.
And I'm trying to balance those two out.
So maybe for you, then, the task is to discover the escape part. And if you understand the escape well, then you just, maybe some of the dangers won't exist. Because some of the danger has to do with your conceit, your fear that you stink, right? And you know, that the people are not going to like you, or they're going to boo you off the stage. I don't know what to, but maybe the escape is to, if they're willing to have you, if they ask you to be along and you have fun and great, and if they don't want you anymore, then so be it. And you know, you gift you give them, and say, you tell them, you know, I don't think I'm really as good as you guys, but I really enjoy playing with you. I feel grateful to play with you. Just let me know when the time is for me to stop. And then you don't have to worry about it. And then it's no longer your issue. And so for you, I think the understanding the escape, understanding what you need to be freed from, so you can engage in it in a way that works. Okay, so gratification, danger. Or do you want to? So one more person wants to ask. Yeah, one more person. Let's do one more.
You spoke at the very beginning of your talk about changing the way that we see things, and I wondered if you have a situation. I have a situation with a family member where there was a kind of fallout situation, and I'm trying to figure out how do I change the way that I see the situation, because I was emotionally very affected by what happened.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could talk about that, because the problem with, and happens, you know, in my relationship with her, that I get caught, like you were saying, you know, I get caught in the dysfunction, for lack of a better word, of the relationship, and I'm trying to develop a kind of distance and detachment.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you could comment about that, because how do you find a different way of looking at it so that you don't get emotionally affected?
Yeah. So it's hard for me to say anything without knowing a lot of the details of that, because it's such a wide range of things that fit that description. But here's a little something you can drop into it, and then maybe it can help you answer the question for yourself. And
okay.
And that is, what do you think you would, what new perspective you think you would have on yourself, on the relationship, on the situation, if you gave the person a gift?
That's a really different way of seeing it.
and what way would it be different? Does it give you a different way to look at it that would somehow make it kind of loosen it up somehow? Or
I would have to give up my anger about it.
Hmm. And is that something you want to do?
I think it's something I have to do.
So you might try again.
Because it's, you know, it just catches me in its grip.
So you might try the gift thing.
Okay.
But you have to, there's a danger there in giving a gift. Because gift exchange often comes with expectations, and people understand it different ways. So you have to understand yourself well, What expectations do you have when you give a gift? The escape would be to give the gift without any expectation. It's a way for you to help you see it in a new way, not to manipulate the situation and get it to be what you want it to be.
Wow.
And then see what happens.
Thank you so much. That was really helpful.
Great. Thank you. Okay. So now you can escape. Thank you.